Accession number 24192, reel 9.
Mr. Taylor, reel 9. We were talking about the time in the reserve position, but over this general period, the withdrawal position, over this general period, what would you sort of do in the afternoon? You know, on a normal day.
In the line.
Yeah.
In the afternoon, I'd do out the duties for the night.
Now, what did that involve?
It involved making sure that the other NCOs are aware of who. They've got a list of the people who will be on sentry, because you have one sentry in each pit during the night, doing the normal duty, two on, four off. You'd work that one out, make sure that everybody else was aware of what was happening and what was happening during the night. If we had a stand two during the night, who to get up first and who to get up in order. Make sure that the twin commander knew, if he wasn't already working in the CP. Make sure that the grenades and everything were primed as per normal for the night. You know, remember we stripped them down during the day and then detonated them at night.
Put the detonator in.
And that's about it, really, for the afternoon.
So would you get some kip or...?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Normally, if we weren't on duty, the NCOs probably sometimes went on duty in the CP. So you sort of relieved the twin commander in the CP to receive any message or anything that route, if they required us, because patrols are out all the time. So if they required us to support the patrol, if patrol got in a problem.
That's at night.
Yeah. If patrol got in a problem, then you had to back them up, probably with a section of mortars. Two mortars firing only, and this sort of thing. So you had those sort of duties to do as well. So that those orders would be given out as well. Plus the fact that the twin commander would probably go on a briefing or an old group with the CO, and he'd come back and then give us all the NCOs the briefing. We would then go back and get the guys together and make sure that they knew exactly what was happening and who was going out and out at night, what company were preparing, using the patrol, doing the patrols. And then everybody would be in the picture as to what was happening during that night. Once everybody knew exactly who was going on guard or on duty first, the others would get their heads down, sleep. I would probably go into sleep, probably about, I don't know, 9 o'clock, and they would wake me up at midnight, and I can then have a walk around and make sure everything was going fine, everybody was there, everybody was standing up awake and not asleep. And then again, at stand two, during the night, make sure I was woke up first, so I could make sure everybody was out for stand two.
You'd never have to go out on patrols, I presume, given the nature of your job.
No, we didn't. No, the only time when we moved forward to do the harassing fire at night, forward of the companies, that's the only time we went any out of the positions.
Now, what happened, I mean, perhaps the next thing is, what happened next, after in November, you'd withdrawn to these withdrawal positions?
We withdrew to form a new position.
Now, where exactly was this position?
That was about half a mile to the rear, as I can remember, half a mile to the rear of the original position. So, in fact, everybody had moved back, the battalion moved back. So, in fact, we formed the line again, as we were before. And we're from there is where we supported the Leicesters. They moved back through us, and we support them on their attack. From there, I can't remember how long we were in that position. I don't think it was very long, actually, before we moved back into reserve for a couple of weeks.
Now, was this reserve near this reservoir? Now, I can't remember the name of the reservoir, but
Yeah, no, what was the name? I can't remember the name of it.
Well, we said London was near the reservoir. Yep. We can look it up later where it was. Now, what was it like in reserve?
It was more or less going through everybody's kit, all the bits and pieces that you had, and making sure everything was in working order again. Doing a bit of training, motor training.
Let's take it through. So how would you go? Tell me more about going through everybody's kit. I mean, what were you looking for? And what damage, what didn't stand up to it, and how would it be replaced?
Everything, all the clothing, boots, combat gear, everything, the underclothes, socks, all the way, like mess tins and everything that they would use for a daily routine. You would go through and make sure before we went back out again that they were in good order. If not, you'd get them changed to a certain extent.
How did they stand up to it?
I think they stood up very well. Stood up very well, yeah. So, and make sure everybody had a fair bit of freedom as opposed to sort of sitting in a mortar pit for 2 or 3 months. Some of them went on R&R to Tokyo from reserve position.
Did you get that?
I went there. Yeah.
So what was the R&R like? Tell me what the trip was like.
We motored down to Seoul. And from there we picked up I think it was a Globemaster, the American Globemaster. Took us into Tokyo. Can't remember exactly the name of the airport where we landed, but it was in Tokyo. From there we went by bus to I suppose it was a big building which they sort of commandeered as a hotel. And went there and gave us clean clothes and shirts, trousers, underwear, socks, everything like that. And then we were allocated rooms. I can't remember how many were in the room, probably about four, I think. Four to a room. And then you were sort of free to do what you wanted to do. Spent a lot of time with the Americans, and they had more facilities than we did, like pool rooms and this sort of thing that they'd gotten together, which they normally did anyway. They're sort of PX was always good.
PX?
It's like our NAFI, but on a fairly larger scale. You could buy things there which you couldn't buy out. Well, we had nothing like that anyway, so as far as I remember. I went down to Hiroshima, had a day down there, having a look around to see where the bomb dropped.
What state was it in then?
It wasn't in a very good state then. Some of the posts were up and you could see where the bombs, the blast had gone past the post, left the shadow on the post and all this sort of thing. There wasn't a great deal, it'd been cleared up of course, but there wasn't a great deal of buildings or anything around at the time that I can remember.
What was the Japanese, how did you get on with them? Because it was only, six, seven years after the end of the war.
What contact I had with them seemed to be all right. The shops and this sort of thing, the odd bar, they were getting the money, so that's why they were quite happy.
But there was no feeling of.
It didn't appear to be. I never heard of any anyway. Never heard of any aggro or anything with the locals at all.
So it was a good leave.
It was a good leave. Yeah, 7 days, and we flew back. And another, I think probably we had 2 or 3 weeks in reserve, I can't remember offhand.
Anything else you do? So you're replacing your kit on kit.
Yeah.
You mentioned training.
Yeah, we did a bit of training, so extra training, like just to keep them on the boil, test of elementary training, like the change over the number one doing number twos, and number twos doing number ones, and this sort of thing. And other than that, that's about it, really.
And that was... So when did you go back in the line?
I can't remember the dates.
We can look that up, I mean...
I can't remember whether we went to Samichon first or last. I think we went to Samichon second position we went to. down the San Miton Valley. We took over from the French Canadians, the Royal 22nd Regiment, the Vandoos. We took over their mortar positions, which went...
That would fit, yes. Yeah, November they went to San Miton Valley.
It wasn't a very good position, actually. Well, the position itself was okay, as opposed to firing and this sort of thing. But the state of the was terrible. They'd just thrown their rubbish everywhere, and there was rats and what have you around the position. The bunker that I was allocated was terrible. I could just stretch out with a sleeping bag in it. And they had mice running around at night, mice and rats. And what they'd done, they'd put a picket through the outside wall. So instead of having to go out at night, they could urinate in the picket and run out through the wall outside, sort of thing. So what we had to do was really, really clean up around the position where they'd thrown all the rubbish. We had a big, we burnt it, virtually burnt the area, put all the rubbish into one pile and burnt it, everything. Then we covered it with what the old lice powder, AL63, to try and get rid of the lice and that sort of thing. I then decided that I couldn't sleep in that bunker, so I got the guys to dig me another one. So we got pickets together, and lots of pickets, and dug another one, built one, built the bunk, the bed with the pickets and ropes and what have you. And then we went on from there with we were fired quite a bit from there. We did, when we took over from the French Canadians, they left a lot of their ammunition behind. They said they would come and collect it. So we this was American ammunition, 81mm, which we could fire. So we purloined it as such. We borrowed it from them. So when they came back for it, we said that they'd taken it all, and we were able to use it. Well, with a 3-inch mortar bomb, if you don't put it in the barrel, it sort of rattles down the barrel and it comes out at this sort of angle. So that's where you get a broad band of on the ground at the other end. But with a 81mm mortar, it fits tight. So when it comes out like a rifle shot. So you can sort of put six on a pussy stamp, actually. Because we did that one day, and I think we fired 10. And put it 10 rapid fire. By that time, you could run up the top of the hill where we were firing over and watch them come down. And they all went on this little bridge. There was a little bridge across the river, across the San Miton Valley. And you could see it all on the bridge. So that was good. That's what we kept there. We knew that they would be better than the old three inch. So that was a good setup for the lads. So they see something different. And the road during the winter, the sort of the main. We had some, just around the corner from us, around the headland, was an American company of some description, I can't remember what, and they used to use the road past us, and it was in a slope during the winter, and they shout, give us a push. And so you had probably had one guy in the back throwing the stuff out, and the others were pushing it. This sort of thing helped themselves, the Americans rationed or whatever.
What about the effects of the cold conditions? Because that's November through. I think we were there quite a while in San Miton.
We were in San Miton quite a while.
What was it like?
It was, well, initially it wasn't until nearly Christmas before we were still in battle dress. And it wasn't until nearly Christmas before we got our combat kit. As I said earlier, if you remember, I said earlier when we had this combat kit on trial, and they took it away from us, but we never got it. And it took us till Christmas to get it. We just went out normally into Korea with battle dress and normal boots. And they were like a sieve with a snow water and this sort of thing. It just went straight through it. So we went, it wasn't on Christmas, we got the winter kit. And before that, guys were using the blanket, got a hole in the top, drape it over and sew it at the sides and put a pullover or something on the top of it. I found that you couldn't really shave till midday, when it got a little bit of warmth. Everybody showered about midday. We had to start the vehicles about every 15 minutes during the night to stop them from freezing up. I think we probably had about six vehicles.
Did they have antifreeze then? Didn't they? I'm not sure when it came in.
I think they had antifreeze, but you still had to. It was very cold.
How cold was it then?
It was so cold. It's the coldest I've ever been in my life. And once we got the parkas, the big parkas and everything, it was still very cold. You could make a cup of tea, but you had to drink it fairly quickly, otherwise it would be frozen cold again. That's how bad it was.
What about heating? What arrangements were there for heating? Because heating can be dangerous.
The only heating was that we made ourselves with the petrol cans. That was dangerous. That was dangerous, actually. Petrol can, an empty ammunition box, cut a top, or put a chimney on it, so the chimney's at the top of the bunker, which you could only use at a certain time because at night you couldn't very well use it too much. And you put a bit of wood or something in it to keep it going and get a bit of heat around the bunker. And I didn't have anything in mine, if I remember rightly. Once I got in the sleeping bag, it was all right. But that was the only heating. That was the only heating there was. It was cold. Very, 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 very cold. Very, very cold.
What was morale like? Because something, you know.
I found it was quite good. You get one or two people who, especially in the shelling time, you know, were saying, we'll be killed, we'll all be killed. And you had to sort of calm them down and saying, well, there's nothing you can do about it. We've got to do things that help other people. And so there's nothing you can do about it. We're being shelled. We're not actually on the position because with us, sitting behind a hill, you had to get another mortar to drop down onto you. With a shell, it would go straight over you and behind you, finish up behind you. So it wasn't too bad, except it still didn't make it any easier. But found that 70% of the shell goes forward anyway. So you don't get too much back from it.
What about, any welfare problems with people being away from home for a long time, or that you were aware of?
No, not aware of. We used to get the mail quite good.
Tell us about that.
Everybody, I can't remember. I think we had to go down and collect it, if I remember rightly. And it came in pretty regular, actually. If people were writing, we got it quite regularly.
Did you write home regularly?
Yeah.
What would you write about? I mean,
it's not a great deal you could write about, actually. Just write and say that you were well. It was cold, dirty, muddy. That's about all you could write.
So were you aware of censorship? I mean, I presume your officer, would it be Della who would censor your letters, or...?
I can't remember it being censored, actually. I don't think we had a censorship there at all.
And what would people write to you? I mean, I don't know who you'd write... What could they write to you?
Well, Mother would always say that she was worried, because they read about it in the paper all the time, about things that were going on there. Very worried, and... Everybody else was all right at home, and about the family, how things were going, and as I can remember anyway. We did have some people, they sent letters for writing for people to make things, or scarves and that sort of thing, for the soldiers in Korea. We used to get a few parcels from...
I was going to ask about parcels. What sort of parcels would you get, and who from? From the family or from local?
No, from all over the UK, from anywhere. I think what they did, they asked for them, and then they all went to a certain pool, and then they sent so many to that unit.
What would be in the parcels?
Scarves, mittens, balaclavas, socks, the odd pullover, and all this sort of thing. Just something for the cold weather, really. in Men the Main. I think one or two people had capes and that sort of thing sent in. But what it was like, I don't know. I got a scarf, I think, in one that came out. And I think it came from Birmingham somewhere, if I mean rightly. Some people had letters in the parcels that came, so they wrote back, and some of them had pen friends from the time they received them until we came back.
But you didn't.
I didn't. No. Whether anybody carried it on or whether got married to the people, I don't know. But some of the young girls, it's all right. I think that the parcels that came were a lot from young people, really. So whether it went to schools or the letters went to schools and this sort of thing, and then they took them home to the parents and grandmothers, and or whether Women's Institute sat down and made the items.
Go ahead. I wondered, anything happened while you were in a sandwich on, you know, any breaks from routine, or was it just a routine as we did?
Much the same as we had before. We didn't move a lot at all. I did move forward and did a couple of Harrison shoots at night.
Tell me about them, because we sort of skated over them a bit last time. What would happen?
Well, sit down in the, probably in the morning, and the platoon commander would know exactly what patrols were going out. He'd had his briefing, and he said, we've got to support such and such patrol at such and such an area. You knew exactly where the enemy were moving. They used to move roughly in the same area each time. And we've got to support such and such patrol, and you're going to do it. Then they would do the set out the map, the ranges, possibly go down in the afternoon, have a quick recce of the position that we're going to do at night, set out the posts and the base plate flag so you can drive in at night and put your base plate down, and you were set up ready to fire, and just set the sight and you're ready to fire. And you then worked on intervals of initially at a certain time you would fire five rounds, normal fire, and you'd probably fire five rounds rapid fire at different places. But you had it all mapped out, so you knew exactly what was happening. You used to stay there about 2 hours, and unless something was coming back at you, and then you had to move out. But it usually took about 2 hours.
And would you be screened by another
a
platoon as well as the patrol that was out? Or
no, we had nothing. Nobody was there. Nobody where we were. As long as you're in a hill in front of you, you're all right. But as long as no mortars come with the shells, you don't worry too much about it. You got sort of, you didn't get used to them, but you knew roughly where it was going and whether it was going out or coming in. And then you would up sticks and move back to the base plate position.
Now, how often would that be?
How often would you do it? I suppose that down the Samitan, I did it more in one of the other positions than in the Samitan.
Later on,
yeah.
Okay, we'll perhaps come back to that.
I think I did about three times in the Samitan.
Because they were there till February.
They were there till about February, yeah.
So about once a month.
That's right, yeah. It depends how much activity from the enemy side they had. They knew the different units moving. It depended on a lot on the changeover. You could always tell roughly when the changeover of the Chinese, where there was a sort of a lull for the patrols and this sort of thing, and the number of patrols that were going out at a certain point.
Were you aware of Korean fifth columnists or guerrillas or however you want to call them operating behind the British lines or the Allied lines?
No, I wasn't aware of them. I don't think too many people were, as far as we were concerned, anyway.
So that was irrelevant.
Yeah, to us.
So what else do you remember about your time in Samitan? Was it different terrain from what it had been before on the hills?
Well, you were set up around the valley, And it was quite, it was a big valley, wide open, completely wide open space. We used to have, this was the first time that we had tanks, that I can remember. The tanks would come up every night, that last light, and park themselves at the top of our position.
So you were on the hills surrounding the valley?
Yeah, the whole battalion were on the hills surrounding the valley. And the tanks would come up at night, and they would... I'm not quite sure why they were there, actually, but I think they were there to have a shot at something and then go down again in the morning. They always seemed to, I thought, they'd give our position away if they sit up there too long, but they never did. And I always thought that also that if they had the break off when they fired the gun, it would come down onto us, because it sat right on top of us, the tank. But they used to come up sort of two or three times a week at night, and used to fire the odd shot. If they had something like a bunker they wanted to get rid of, they would fire a shot. I don't suppose they fired more than probably three shots a night, three shells a night. Probably ammunition too expensive, or they didn't have too much. I don't know how it worked, but they didn't appear to fire too much, but they were there.
Any other troops come forward or that you were aware of in the area?
I know the Americans were down there on our right, somewhere on our right. Cause they used to come up past us. The main road sort of ran past our position. Our vehicles were parked to the other side of the road. And we had a latrine the other side of the road, which got hit with a shell, by the way. Nobody was in it at the time. Other than that, I can't remember any other troops going through us or going around us or to do anything, any job.
You seem to have got on well with the American troops.
Yeah, I think we did. We were all in the same boat, really. So that was a matter of getting on. But yeah, I think we got on right with them. Yeah.